Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello?
Hi!
This is Anna.
And Shireen.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
Episode 112.
We talk about a woman in Iran setting herself on fire to protest not being let into Iranian male soccer games. And we talk about John Bolton being fired.
And we also talk about an actor that refused to be on a Netflix show because he supported Palestinian rights and the BDS movement, and why you should be wary of the stuff you consume on Netflix because a lot of it is Israeli propaganda. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Blurine.
Hi, Blana.
Blana sounds so sad. Hi, Glorine.
Hi. Episode 112
of Ethnically Ambiguous.
Wow, that's a lot. How was your weekend?
Fine. I went to the roast of Alec Baldwin. You know how I do. I went to the after party by myself. It was really sad. And then I went home after stealing a whole lot of donuts.
Nice. Were they good?
The donuts? Yeah, they're from Donut Friend.
So oh my God. Like really fuck good. Yeah. That's what I was hoping for. Anything by any event that has Donut Friend. Fucking.
They had so much. They had good. Like 4 tables of food of like buffet and then like free drinks. And it was wild. Comedy Central, dude, they can put on quite the party.
For those that don't know, Donut Friend is a beautiful vegan donut place in LA. Highly recommend if anyone ever comes to LA. It's a hit for everybody. I was camping this weekend.
How was it? In the Sequoias?
Yeah, I went to the Sequoia National Forest. We hiked this particular hike in the giant forest where there are like so many clusters of these giant trees. Honestly, the Sequoias are so ancient. Like, they feel like these colossal ancient beings, and they've truly been here for so long.
They feel that way because they are.
And yeah, they're like, one of them has been here. General Sherman has been around for like over 2,000 fucking years. Like, what the, like, it just blows my mind. It was such an incredible experience. We did go on a little trip. We took some shrooms and we like explored the forest. And
you went on a wink wink trip?
I went on a trip. But shrooms, if anyone knows me, my drug of choice, if I do too,
is crack.
No, but shrooms, I don't know what it is, but every experience has been so eye-opening and beautiful, and especially if you're in nature, and this is like no exception. And Anna, we talked about this before. She was there when I did acid for the first time, and she talked about how much I cried. I think it's just a thing with me and hallucinogens. I cry every time. This was no exception. I cried when I was eating a sandwich. I cried when I was looking at a caterpillar. I cried every tree I saw. I was just in tears because I was just like so overwhelmed with the beauty of nature. It was, I think everyone needs to go to a forest and just like sit in it and appreciate trees, man. I don't know. It was a great weekend. I was also, because we had packed lunches before the hike because it was like a 7-mile hike and in the giant forest. And so my sister and I made these peanut butter banana sandwiches on pita bread. And growing up, we always had peanut butter and pita bread together because we just never really grew up with white American bread. So I think eating the peanut butter and pita together, and like sitting on this log in the middle of this giant meadow, I just started crying. It was beautiful, but everyone should just go into a forest and just like be. I love forests. I want to live in a forest.
Yeah.
I just love forests, man.
Mm-hmm.
The trees and the stars. The stars were so beautiful. I mean, it's a given.
You're like a city person who went outside for the first time.
No, I just like.
Have you seen these stars?
No, but seriously, like you forget that we have stars here.
Would you characterize them as lit?
I would characterize.
I know.
The stars
honestly,
as lit.
Every time I go home to my parents' house, I'm like, God, man, we really miss out on this.
Like, we just have a blanket over our heads. We have nothing in the sky except for the moon occasionally. But like, the minute you go into the desert or you leave the city lights and like all the air pollution, you see the actual night sky, and it's fucking amazing. The moonlight was so bright, and the stars were. Just get out here, get out of there. Go to a forest. Go to a mountain. Appreciate nature. Touch a tree. That place just felt like an ancient, magical place, and it is. But if anyone out there has played Shadow of the Colossus, it's my favorite game other than like Zelda. But Shadow of the Colossus, every time I'm in a place like that, it reminds me of these like every massive boulder or massive tree or like massive anything. I just think it's like these, it can come to life and like erupt out of the ground, and it's like been a sleeping beast this whole time. And I know I sound like a fucking weirdo, but
it's very Harry Potter.
But I just think,
which we don't discuss because we're a Catholic podcast.
That blasphemy.
Wizardry is devil tree.
Yeah. But anyway, wizardry. Highly encourage the Sequoia National Forest. And my parents and I and my, well, my, we're all taking a family trip next month to Yosemite, which we've also never been to before. So I feel good that I'm finally going to these places that I feel like everyone else in California has been to.
It's interesting that Yosemite, if you just say it like Yosemite, sounds kind of like anti-Semite.
Yosemite! Yeah.
Interesting that your family would go there. Hmm. I'm just joking. I'm not calling you guys anti-Semites. That's like what, like, I don't know. It's like something. You know, never mind.
It's like how we were when we were in Davis. Everyone was like YOLO County. And YOLO was a huge thing back then. That's what it reminds me of.
Really quickly,
mm-hmm.
I think we should discuss this before we go into our shows. John Bolton's been fired.
Woo! Fuck off.
He got fired. You guys are hearing this a week later, but he got fired. We're recording on Tuesday. We're recording earlier than normal because Shariri has to go see her Mimi.
Yeah, my mom's birthday.
So today, which is Tuesday, John Bolton was fired this morning or last night. I don't know. Unclear. Trump's tweets. It's not like you can be like, well, that's accurate because you don't know what anything is. He said he let go of him because, you know, they've been disagreeing over how to handle Iran, North Korea, Afghanistan, everything.
Yeah.
They don't get along. And because John Bolton's a war hawk and his mustache is nasty and probably smells like asshole, he's a human Muppet. I think it was kind of becoming clear that he was going to get let go because the NSA, apparently, they've gone like far to make sure like certain matters of foreign policy are not like briefings don't include him. Like he's being excluded from top level meetings. Mm-hmm. That's according to the Washington Post, which they printed last week. So it was kind of being like, oh, okay, things aren't looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not like invited to meetings compromised of top military officials, including like Mike Pompeo, our Secretary of State, CIA's directors Gina Haspel and Secretary of Defense Mark Esper. And then if they do give him anything to read, he has to be sitting in a room with like a senior officials while he reads it. Like he's not allowed to take a paper file out of a room. They have to sit and watch him read it because apparently he gets accused of like leaking. Like if he gets upset and feels like he's being shaded, he'll go leak something to the press basically.
Wow, mature.
Yeah, no, he's like the definition of a little bitch. Yeah, it said, according to Business Insider, the senior U.S. official have also been wary of Bolton's activities and have been concerned about leaks from his team. According to one official in the report, Bolton requested a draft copy of the U.S. agreements with the Taliban, but was denied by Zalmay Khalilzad, the U.S. representative for peace in Afghanistan, and could only read it with another senior official present. So even like other folk who are like,
you
no.
You have to babysat. You have to be
no,
babysat.
Fuck this guy. Yeah. No one takes him seriously. He just wants to like
yeah,
fuck things up. There's no trust in him. And yeah, so he's out.
He's out.
It's a good and bad thing because we don't know who the fuck he's going to bring in after. It's always so like, okay, who do we have to worry about next? And then at the same time, it's like, oh, thank God this fucking little like war hawk of a mustache is out of here.
Warhawk of a mustache. His autobiography comes soon. I know.
Let's bomb them is his like probably yeah, most
his tagline.
Known saying.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's great. Womp womp.
Imagine being like, I'm a national security, head of national security. And they're like, yeah, that's cool and all. But you do realize it's the Trump administration and none of your titles mean anything?
No. No.
President barely means anything.
Barely. Means anything. Just means top tweeter. Anyway, should we just get into it?
Sure.
Cool.
Did you go first last time or did I?
I think you can take the reins. I think I went first last time, personally, if I remember correctly.
Look at all this like cursive someone was practicing on here. There's like a legal pad where someone was like writing in cursive over and over again.
Adorable. I practice writing forwards and backwards all the time.
This is really weird. I don't like this at all. I'm going to report this to HR. What if I was that much of a monster? I'd get people fired over things like this. I don't know. I think they're psycho. Like they're writing.
Who writes in cursive anymore?
They're writing nonsensically on notepads. I think we need to watch them.
Yeah. Who uses? I mean, we have computers.
In today's climate, you really can't write nonsensically anywhere, or someone's going to be like, "Don't trust them. They're planning something." Jesus Christ! So no. Ah! New notepad, guys.
New notepad.
That
fresh
pad
and
had
clean
no
for episode
room
112.
For me. D12, 112? No, 112 was a separate thing.
What?
112, the group?
112 was a group?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
Musicians?
I don't know them.
112, right, Zach? Yeah, American R&B quartet.
Oh. 112.
Peaches and Cream. That's that
Atlanta,
song.
Atlanta, Georgia. Formerly artist on Bad Boy Records.
Peaches and Cream was a great song.
Yeah, that is from them. You're right.
Okay. Sorry. So I want to talk about something. So, God damn it. I was thinking we could change this show. Just, we'll talk about it afterward. But maybe, like, we talk about beautiful rugs and flowers.
Yeah.
Moving forward and no more about news.
No more. No more. That'll make me happier.
So I want to talk about what's going on in Iran in regards to women being able to enter football stadiums. So in the past, several women have caught people's attention by revealing the lengths that they would go into to attend a football match in Iran. They wear beards and wigs, and they disguise themselves as men so they can watch a bunch of different teams like Persepolis and Sepidrud and there's a few more other teams I can't remember off the top of my head, in the Azadi Stadium in Tehran. And like they will like post photos, and they're like widely shared on like, you know, Iranian and English and American social media. There's no official ban on women going to sporting events in Iran, but it's very rare for them to attend because they are refused entry. And, you know, prior to the Islamic Revolution in 1979, women were allowed to attend sporting events because, yeah, it's before the revolution, if you know what I mean. And women have been punished for attending games in the past. In 2014, British-Iranian activist Gonche Ghayami, she was detained after attempting to watch a men's volleyball match in Iran. And in March 2018, 35 women were detained for trying to attend a football match. And that's soccer.
That's absurd.
Wait for it. Well, actually, in February, women were allowed to watch a major basketball game in Tehran, but they had to sit in an area separate to men.
Hmm.
One woman who's done it, she explained that each time she had snuck in, she had used a different disguise and makeup. She said, I Google for different makeup tutorials and learn new ways to apply them to go to the stadium.
Wow.
She told the newspaper that she had been stopped by security only once, and she encouraged other women to get in touch and offer to train them in disguise techniques. When she was asked whether she was scared of being detained, she replied, why would I be scared? We women do not commit any crimes by going to stadiums. The law has not defined women's presence at stadiums as a crime. They have, of course, detained a few women, and they have given a written promise not to go back there. So from like the photos they post on social media, like many responses they receive are very encouraging. Like mm-hmm. they say, good on you. That takes such bravery. But of course, you know, most people are not happy. One person asked, why don't you go and watch a women's match? Why would you have to go to the men's stadium? Which is like, cool. Another woman was asked by the sports newspaper Habar Varseshi how she had avoided the security guards. And she said, we went through the first and second gates in a group and no one figured it out. But once we sat in the stands, everyone realized. They came over and took selfies with us, praising us for going. Another interesting thing is all of those who knew we were women did not shout anything rude throughout the match. Few men had accompanied the group to make sure they were okay. And when they asked her if it was worth the risk, she replied, of course, why not? Our goal is to keep going until they allow all women to go. We are doing this to say to the authorities that if they don't let us in, we will keep going nonetheless, with or without beards. Fortunately, and this is where it gets fucked up, this is not every woman's experience sneaking into games. This woman's story, 29-year-old Sahar Hodayari, was arrested in March when she tried to enter a football stadium. She has been closely followed by Iranians around the world who use the hashtag Blue Girl, which was in reference to the colors of her favorite team, Esteghlal. Kalal. Oh my God. Esteghlal. I can never say this. There's a certain cue I can't hit very well in Farsi because I'm not, it's not as natural for me to say it, but it's like the quiche. If you're from Iran, it's like kesh, but it's like kesh, kesh. Guys,
look, I am not well versed in.
Rarely do I speak to my parents and have to drop such throaty cues, if you will. So, being jailed after she was detained in March, after being jailed for 3 days, she was released on bail and waited 6 months for her court case. But when she appeared at court, she had found it had been postponed because the judge had a family emergency. So Sahar, she returned to court to pick up her mobile phone. It's reported that she is thought to have overheard someone saying that if she were convicted, she could get 6 months to 2 years in prison.
Wow. Wow.
This is where it turns. She then set herself on fire in front of the courthouse. At that point, she poured gasoline on herself and set it on fire, receiving burns on 90% of her body, according to hospital officials. And then she was on life support ever since.
Holy shit. Her sister
told the official IRNA news website last week that the victim also suffered from bipolar disorder, and she has, as of today, passed away in the hospital due to her burns.
Wow.
Yes. So, you know, it's really crazy. Like, she was doing it in protest to be like, this is fucked up, and surprisingly, it's actually created quite a lot of discussion in Iran.
Mm-hmm. I'd hope so. Jesus.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like I said, like women haven't attended men's sporting events since the revolution. And other than like last year, they lifted a ban, which is not a real ban, but they allowed women to watch the World Cup being streamed at a stadium in Tehran.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Human Rights Watch, while it's not written into law, it is ruthlessly enforced. FIFA has given the Islamic Republic until October to pave the way for women to freely enter sports arenas and watch men's live soccer matches. Otherwise, Iran could face removal from all international soccer events. Of course, this is not something the country has guaranteed yet.
Mm-hmm.
FIFA, in a statement, said, "We are aware of the tragedy and deeply regret it. FIFA conveys our condolences to the family and friends of Sahar and reiterate our calls on the Iranian authorities to ensure the freedom and safety of the women engaged in this legitimate fight to the end. To end the stadium ban for women in Iran." According to Philip Luther from Amnesty International, he called the case heartbreaking and said that her death showed the impact of Iran's appalling contempt for women's rights, and her death must not be in vain. It must spur change in Iran if further tragedies are to be avoided in the future.
Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's like a woman has to literally self-immolate herself to get some attention. Jesus Christ. So the captain of the Iranian national soccer team, Masoud Shojaei, he wrote on his Instagram As we are shocked by old limitations set for women, the future generations will be astonished to find out that women were banned from entering sports arenas in our time. And he has over 400,000 followers on Instagram. So that's actually like very big of him to mm-hmm. point out that this is fucked up. And so, yeah, earlier this month, Iranians started a campaign online for world sporting organizations to ban the country from competitions to stop what they see as state interference in sports. Tehran-based journalist Akbar Montajabi wrote, "The fact that a girl full of energy committed suicide is a sign that there's something wrong with the Iranian society." So
incredibly wrong. Wow, that is heartbreaking.
It's really sad. It's like
she literally set herself on fire because
she was like, government. I went into a soccer game, which technically is not illegal.
She committed these women aren't doing anything wrong. They just want to be treated as equal and watching this fucking game.
Yeah, so that's where we're at. I mean, hopefully Iran will understand that. I mean, here's hoping that FIFA really does something by October.
I hope they do set that line. I hope they do have that ultimatum because that's not acceptable.
Yeah. Women should not have to set themselves on fire to prove a point. Like, that's crazy.
And I mean, like, and it kind of worked. Like, it got people's attention. And I'm sure it sounds like she was battling a lot of other mental demons, but it was probably emphasized. Like, her struggles were.
The other thing is, you should never set yourself on fire. No. For protest, I understand where she was coming from. She was in some, I mean, I believe, I don't know her life, so I can't comment further, but like, if you're thinking that, maybe don't set yourself on fire.
No.
Don't set yourself on fire. Well, on that note, don't set yourself on fire, and we'll be right back after a quick commercial break. Everything is so great.
Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house. And I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature. And of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture. And we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
We're back. Wow.
Shireen.
Oh, is it my turn?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I wanted to talk about Netflix. And I know I talk a lot about like filmmaking or whatever, but I do think it's really important because movies and TV.
It's so obnoxious.
No, but movies and TV are really, I feel like, where a lot of people get their news or like information, mm-hmm. especially stuff that's like based in history.
Yeah.
Netflix just came out with this show called The Spy with Sacha Baron Cohen playing a real life spy from the 60s. He's an Israeli spy called Eli Cohen, who infiltrated the Syrian government and was a huge reason why Israel won the Six-Day War. And he was a big reason why they knew exactly where to target Syria to win the war. And it's been getting a lot of praise. But I want to draw attention to the fact that a lot of Israeli shows are really heavily propaganda-based, and they show Israel in only a good light, which is, like, I guess normal if you're someone from a country that's, like, making a show about your place. But there's an actor called David Clenin, and he's not a very well-known actor, but he posted this article last month where he says, "I said no to a Netflix audition because I support Palestinian rights." And I want to read a little bit from it. He says, "I'm an actor in the U.S. film and television industry, and I've been around more than 40 years. Recently, I was invited to audition for a new Netflix television series with the working title Sycamore. The appointment sheet informed me that I would be trying out for the role for a series regular character described as an American politician living in New York. I was intrigued, and as I was preparing, the casting directors, I hope, would see my self-tape video and want me to and show my videos to the producers of the series. As he was preparing, he noticed the last two lines at the bottom of the appointment sheet. It said the start date was September 2019 and the location was New York and Tel Aviv. And he says, "I decided to do a little research in the Hollywood trade papers and discovered that Sycamore had been the new working title of a series announced in 2018 as Hit and Run, and it was co-production of U.S. and Israeli companies, and two of the creative executive producers of the new series, Avi Isharnov and Lior Raz, they were the creator producers of the Israeli Netflix series Fauda. Fauda is the Arabic word for chaos, and it's also an action-adventure drama set in Israel and the occupied territories." He says, "I was aware that the show had been criticized for its portrayal of Palestinians and for its tendency to justify Israel's human rights abuses. A lot of Palestinians have a lot of issues with the show. I'll get into that in a little bit, but I'm going to read a little bit more from David Clemens' piece right here." He says, "Mitchell Abador reviewed the series in the Jewish Currents. He said, Fauda in its second season is clearly not, as its creators have pretended, a humanizing portrayal of Palestinians, but rather it is quite clearly aimed at solidifying an Israeli image of them as cowardly beasts who must be dealt with by any means necessary." This was a review for In the Jewish Currents. David Clemens goes on to say that, "I watched the show myself and noticed it was missing a narrative element. Fauda does not give its international audience the historical context of the conquest of Palestine, which the Palestinian people continue to resist with a range of strategies and methods." He says, "Israeli production companies like those of Isharnov and Raz stand to benefit enormously from their alliances with their American partners and Netflix. In addition to substantial revenue for the companies and the Israeli economy, the Israeli government will benefit from the prestige of creative partnerships with Hollywood. These show business relationships matter politically," which I completely agree with. "The Israeli Foreign Ministry runs the, quote, Brand Israel campaign to use culture, entertainment, and technology to counter Israel's negative image in the world as a racist state that systematically violates human rights." He says, "I have supported the academic and cultural boycott of Israel since the 2014 Israeli war on Gaza. The astonishing display of high and low-tech cruelty, I believe, opened the eyes of many Americans. The academic and cultural boycott is part of a larger movement on the behalf of the human rights and self-determination of the Palestinian people. The overall campaign, as we know, is called Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, BDS, and it originated within Palestinian civil society. I've come to think of Israel as a European settler colonial state, which practices apartheid in order to control the indigenous population as conquered militarily. In this respect, Israel is similar to the previous apartheid state of South Africa, where European white colonialists had conquered the indigenous black African population that occupied their land. In the same way that human rights activists boycotted the South African regime to abolish apartheid, many now are boycotting Israel to pressure its government to end its own practice of apartheid and its other constant daily gross violations of the human rights of the Palestinian people. And he says that he's been encouraged by professors and artists who have refused to lecture or perform in Israel, such as Stephen Hawking or Lord, because they honor the boycott. And he says, I haven't been employed for a year and a half, so with considerable reluctance, I turned down this role. He says, I'm not a high-profile performer, and my refusal to collaborate with these producers will have a negligible effect on this expensive and ambitious project. My decision is just one individual act of conscience and solidarity with the Palestinian people and with dissident Israelis who envision a better future for both peoples. I decided on a small act of resistance. I take some comfort in knowing I'm not alone, and I'm optimistic that others in our industry will seriously consider withholding their talent and their moral support for a regime that abuses the dispossessed, impoverished, and still resilient people under its control. I just really respect this man. Again, he's not someone you've probably ever heard of. He's not a well-known, famous person, but he made a step in the right direction, and he stood with good morals, regardless if he needed a job or not. And in a statement, BDS said that it warmly welcomed his decision. And he says, they said in their statement, Israeli production companies are deeply complicated in Israelis' abuses of Palestinian human rights and violations of international law. They benefit directly and indirectly from its military occupation, ethnic cleansing, and apartheid against Palestinians. We urge Hollywood actors, filmmakers, and in the industry to do no harm to our peaceful struggle for freedom, justice, and equality. So this all goes back to last year in 2018. BDS boycotted essentially the show Fauda, or Fauda, that's how you would say it in Arabic. But back in March in 2018, they released a statement. Basically, the acronym is PACB, P-A-C-B-I, the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. In their statement last year, they called for Netflix to nix the thriller Fauda because it was seen as an anti-Arab racist Israeli propaganda tool that glorified the Israeli military's war crimes against the Palestinian people. And at the time, their statement said that failing to end Fauda would open Netflix to nonviolent grassroots pressure to possible legal accountability. This was last year. Since then, there has been a second season of Fauda. So obviously, Netflix dismissed and doesn't care about the BDS interests or concerns. But in their original statement, they said that PACB is an integral part of the nonviolent BDS movement for Palestinian freedom, justice, and equality, and this movement has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Adding insult to injury, Netflix is scheduled to release season 2 this coming May, and that marked the 70th anniversary of the 1948 Nakba, which is Israel's mass expulsion of most of the indigenous Palestinians from their homes and the destruction of hundreds of their towns and villages. Historians, including prominent Palestinian and Israeli scholars, have documented the systematic and deliberate campaign of ethnic cleansing. We've talked about the Nakba before. But the fact that season 2 was released around the 70th anniversary is completely inappropriate and cruel, in my opinion. The statement went on to say that the series Fauda promotes and legitimizes violent acts committed against Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territory by Israeli army death squads, the so-called Mistarvium. The show's writers, who are members of these units themselves, have based the series on the war crimes committed by these squads against Palestinians. For example, Yassim, this is the secret unit of the Israeli army, which inspired Fauda's creators, it operates undercover in civilian Arab disguise, which amounts to perfidy. Perfidy is a war crime under international humanitarian law, which basically is when these undercover secret units of the Israeli army go in disguise as Arabs and they act as spies and they commit war crimes under this guise. This secret unit is also responsible for numerous targeted assassinations, extrajudicial executions, and the murder and the brutally violent arrest of unarmed Palestinian demonstrators, including young children. In addition, it repeatedly violates the sanctity of Palestinian universities and hospitals. These acts constitute war crimes in international law. By sanitizing and normalizing these crimes, Fauda is directly complicit in promoting and justifying these grave human rights violations. As a report in the Israeli Daily Haaretz put it, Fauda has, quote, romanticized the repugnant aspects of Israel's occupation, which I completely agree with. Last month, Israeli president, this is again from their statement last year. So last year, the Israeli president, Rivlin, he hosted a celebratory gathering that brought together Fauda's crew with leaders of undercover death squad Yamas and hundreds of Israeli soldiers. At the gathering, the series crew expressed their gratitude to Yamas as a source of inspiration for their series and as protectors of life. And the president of Israel expresses gratitude and pride in the series, which is a huge red flag in my opinion. A series shouldn't be this political thing that soldiers and undercover death squads are praising. A huge inspiration for the series is a death squad that committed so many crimes against humanity for Palestinians. The Israeli military and political establishment's embrace and promotion of Fauda reveals its significant role in Israel's branding efforts, as well as its propaganda campaign to cover up its war crimes against the Palestinian people. And so basically, this was all part of the statement for BDS and for Pakabi to call on Netflix to suspend the production of the series. Obviously, it didn't work, but they brought up that HBO and Netflix and streaming services have severed ties with other problematic people, especially with the growth with the Me Too movement. They mentioned Kevin Spacey and Louis C.K. They basically said that Netflix has established a social responsibility standard by ending its collaboration with these two people, and that standard must now be inclusive of refusing to host a series that legitimizes and promotes racist, violent war crimes. They ended their statement by saying freedom of expression is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, but this production does not apply to justification of and incitement to, quote, imminent lawless action, including Israel's ongoing racial violence and egregious human rights violations against Palestinians. So that was their statement back then last year. Obviously, it didn't work. Fauda is still going on, very much praised. But these two creators of the show Fauda, Lior, Raz, and Avi Isharoff, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing those wrong, not only were they part of this underground death squad that committed horrendous crimes against Palestinian people under the guise of Arab civilians by infiltrating their homes and their society, they also identify as Zionist Jews. And I was not going to draw attention to this initially, but then I read this interview they had with these creators that really rubbed me the wrong way. Basically, after BDS made that statement, they were obviously asked about it by media. And Avi, this, he said, it was good PR for us.
Avi? You get the joke? His name's Avi. And I'm saying, Avi. Like,
well, I said to Avi because his last name is going to, I keep mispronouncing it, I feel like. But he said it was good PR for us. And they said that the show, while fictional, they pull from the experiences of both of these creators because they both, again, served in an undercover unit similar to the one on the show. He says that most of the criticism he sees about Fauda as a TV show isn't warranted because he sees it as a political issue within the state of Israel. And he reminds people that this is just a TV show, which is not fair because so much of Israel is politics. You can't make a show about Palestinians and Israelis without politics being involved. It's just not possible.
In my experience, all the shows they make are political, except for that one where they're all doing drugs, the young people, which I think Euphoria is based off of.
Yeah, exactly. And a huge criticism that people had of the show, especially Palestinians, were that Palestinian writers were in the writing room. A reason why I like Our Boys, again, I've talked about it before, but they're working with a Palestinian filmmaker. He's one of the directors, he's one of the main creators, one of the main writers. It's a collaboration. When these two creators were asked about this concern that Palestinian writers should be added to the show to give their perspective, Raz said, I really want to tell all those critics who ask us to bring Palestinian writers, if Palestinians want to write a show, they should write a show. Do it themselves, kind of thing. Like, he's basically saying, this is an Israeli show. If Palestinians want one, make it themselves. Which is really not fair because, again, Israel has such immense ties to the American economy and American funding. Like, they have fucking Netflix behind them. And so that statement really rubbed me the wrong way. And they were asked if they think there was going to be peace between Israelis and Palestinians, if there was a possible two-state solution in their minds. And while Raz said he has hope because Germany and Israel are now friendly nations, basically comparing Palestinians to the Germans, which is absurd to me. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe he's saying Israel is the Germans. I don't know. I just think this entire interview rubbed me the wrong way. The fact that his criticism, his instead of being like, yeah, maybe we should bring a Palestinian on the show or as a writer or anything, his response is they can make their own show, which is just complete bullshit to me. So the anti-Israel BDS boycott movement says that this show and shows like it, they whitewash the occupation. And I think the criticism is correct, honestly, because all the bloodshed in Gaza where Palestinians have tried to breach the fence with Israel and dozens have been shot dead, that's not in Fauda. They show Arabs as this like subcategory of human beings. And even the more moderate voices in the Arab world have been put off by this love fest over Fauda. It's also really annoying because the majority of the show is in Arabic. Even the title of the show is an Arabic word. And so it kind of masks as like a quality-based show. Like this is both perspective when it's really not. Columnist Saeed.
I'm sorry. Are you saying that someone in Israel has stolen something from a different culture and pretended it's theirs? That's so interesting, Shireen.
Oh my God. That's a really good point. Hummus is ours, by the way, if anyone's out there.
According to Rachel Ray, it's Israeli food.
If anyone says Israeli couscous, Israeli hummus to me, Israeli tabbouleh, I'm ready to fight
them. Okay, Shireen.
That's really funny, though. I'm glad you said that. But this columnist, Saeed Kushua, he said the series gave Israelis a sense of superiority by claiming it was popular with Arabs while it served their own narratives. He said, you already have military victories and cultural control in marketing the Israeli occupation policy. At least give the Palestinians the option of hating Fauda. He wrote this in Haaretz. There is nothing in Fauda that addresses the reality of the territories. And in the case of life imitating art, students in the Palestinian Be'erzet University in the West Bank, they captured footage last March because of there's an undercover Israeli commandos arresting the head of the student council there. An Israeli news broadcast, they said it was the real-life Fauda scene. So even when it's reported, it's viewed as this, like, they're still so happy with themselves, which really is disturbing, and I hate it. I'm going to end my little piece after a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know, that's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like, how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello,
acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we're back. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about BDS and then this new show on Netflix with Sacha Baron Cohen and why it's related. Inspired by the international boycott tactics that helped overthrow apartheid in South Africa, because several of its activists were involved in the campaign with Tutu, BDS says it asserts discriminates against Palestinian citizens of Israel and denies Palestinian refugees the right to return to their homes, both in violation of the UN resolutions and to complying with international law. So within the movement, it's partnered with numerous active associations around the world, including Jewish Voice for Peace and Adalah in New York in the U.S., and it's the cultural boycott element launched in 2004 with the acronym PACB, which stands for Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. It's this group which calls on artists in particular to boycott Israel and refuse to perform in the country that has attracted the most attention and generated the greatest controversy. So we've seen this before. We've seen artists refuse to perform in Israel before, and I want to talk about why that's really important, because calling on artists to boycott shows in Israel is one of the most critical aspects of the BDS movement for Palestinian rights, and this is coming from BDS co-founder Omar Baghouti. He told The Hollywood Reporter that the fight against what he calls art washing is Israel's cynical use of culture to cover up its decades-old regime of occupation and apartheid culture. And he says culture is a central weapon in Israel's propaganda arsenal. And I think that is so true when you see their control in entertainment and music and in culture. They're trying to cover up their human rights violations by seeming cultured. And I won't deny, they have good TV shows. They're good at entertainment. They're good at music. They're good at rallying people together. And like, look at fucking Birthright. They're very successful in brainwashing everyone to believe that they're just like this beautiful spiritual place that's just cultural and whatever. But I think BDS is, and Omar, Baghouti, is really correct in saying that they're using culture to cover up the occupation and the reality of their crimes against Palestinians. And so this Netflix series, The Spy, just came out last week, and a lot of people are mad about it. Rightfully so, in my opinion. As I said, it stars Sacha Baron Cohen, and it tells the story of an undercover Israeli spy called Eli Cohen. It has sparked outrage on social media as it portrays this life of the spy, and it's produced by, I mean, I should have known immediately because it's produced by Homeland's producer Gideon Raff. I think Homeland is another example of anti-Arab propaganda, in my opinion. It's basically a 6-episode thriller, and it's inspired by this real-life Israeli spy who worked under Mossad in the 1960s as an Arab man, a Syrian man, to gather intelligence on Syria. A lot of Twitter users have blasted Netflix for the series. It's co-produced by French premium channel Canal Plus, and they questioned why the platform has carried several Israeli and Israel-centric projects over the years, like, again, Netflix originals Fauda and The Angel in 2018. One Twitter user said, "The Spy is pure Israeli propaganda. They even showed on screen Jerusalem, Israel when it came to the location," which is already a sign of bias there. And I think you would agree with that. They can just say Jerusalem. They don't have to say Israel, because that's very clearly showing this is Jerusalem is the capital or like a city in Israel, rather than it was always there in Palestine. So this Twitter user says, "It's pure Israeli propaganda. I can't believe Netflix is allowing such apartheid propaganda on its platform." A Lebanon-born political activist, Dayab Abu Jahja, Jaja means chicken in Arabic, fun fact. He says, for those of you watching The Spy on Netflix, the story of Israeli spy Eli Cohen. He said, well, he gives it away, which is history. I don't really care. I'm going to spoil it. Who cares? The spy is caught and hanged.
Isn't it based on real life?
I know. Well, I don't want everyone to be like, mad. Whatever. Spoiler alert,
I guess. What? Spoiler alerts don't count if it's based off true events. Like,
thank you.
Get over it.
Thank you.
Deepwater Horizon ends with the oil thingy coming down. But guess what? That's a thing you saw happen in real life.
Exactly.
So annoying.
So this activist said, the spy is caught and hanged at the end. Is that a spoiler? Well, I didn't watch it. I know that's from actual history. Now go watch something else other than propaganda. You're welcome. Actor Khaled El-Faraj, he also referenced Raf's Red Sea diving resort.
Actually, you know, it's a spoiler. It turns out that spy was Sacha Baron Cohen doing a character the whole time.
Yeah, he pulls it off and he's Borat again.
Well, he pulls off and he's Ali G.
Yeah.
And then Ali G pulls it off and he's Borat.
Bruno,
and then Borat
and then,
is Bruno.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's just never-ending it's characters. Just,
yeah. It's all
and
part
then,
of his act.
And then he's the dictator in the end.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. There's an actor, Khaled El-Faraj. He wrote that Israel is using Netflix as a, quote, a drama platform through which they propose their heroism, history, and imaginary intelligence while we watch, which I completely agree with and you have to take with a grain of salt. Another Twitter user posted a link to the trailer and said, Netflix produces so many pro-Israel Mossad spy thrillers that it can be treated as a Zionist propaganda media company. I agree with that. Literally, the two creators of Fauda are proud Zionists. They went on to say that those of you who don't know Israel and watch The Spy about Israeli spy Eli Cohen will cry from how Netflix portrays the human side of his personality and how his last moments were difficult for his family. And it shows Syria as the monster of the 60s, which was not accurate. There was a huge six-day war that was fought between Israel and Syria, and Israel won because this guy, Eli Cohen, he gave them the targets of where to drop the bombs, essentially. Last year, this project called The Angel, another Israeli production, it told the story of an Egyptian spy, Ashraf Marwan, who was nicknamed The Angel by Mossad. It also drew backlash and accusations of propaganda from the Arab world. And meanwhile, The Spy has been getting a lot of critical acclaim in the West, and it holds like a 82% on like Rotten Tomatoes. And Baron Cohen has been praised for a very rare dramatic performance because, he's been playing character roles for a long time. But I wanted to talk about that because I think it's really important to question the content that you consume. And I remember so many people telling me to watch Fauda. Like, I remember people really trying to push it on me. I think maybe because it was in Arabic and maybe because it showed Palestinians or something. But everything I read about it just rubbed me the wrong way. And I'm... especially after BDS wanted to boycott it. So I think so many people, their assumptions about the world and their impressions of other people are based on what they consume. A person in the Midwest will watch something and have never had meeting an Arab before or an Israeli before will already have their assumptions about who's right in this Arab-Israeli conflict or Palestinian-Israeli conflict. So I think film and media, and especially this huge, giant conglomerate of Netflix, they have so much power. And when you have that kind of service really showing their biases, I think it's really unfortunate. So knowing who's creating this content is really important. The fact that these creators didn't want a Palestinian writer on board, like, that's a red flag. So that's what I wanted to talk about. Just watch something better. Watch something better. I think you have a meeting.
I do really recommend False Flag on Hulu, though.
Mm-hmm. I want to see.
It's an Israeli show. It's made by the same guy who made Prisoners of War, which turned out to be Homeland. I can't remember his name. I bet he's probably a Zionist too, but he probably might not be. I don't know.
I hated Homeland for so many reasons, but it's just another example of political propaganda masked as like a thriller or like an exciting show.
And Gideon Raf.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, Gideon Raf. But I do really appreciate actors like David Clennon for standing up, even though he's not someone like Scarlett Johansson or like someone with a huge platform.
Oh, Spy is from Gideon Raf.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I missed all of that.
No, it's okay.
I couldn't remember his name.
He's the same guy from Homeland, yeah.
It didn't make that sense to me. I mean, like, I didn't remember his name, so I didn't connect it. But Did he do false flag? I don't think he did false flag. Maybe he did.
I mean, I'm not going to deny that Israeli productions and Israeli entertainment, they're great at what they do. But I do think a lot of it is because they have the funds to do it, because a lot of American money goes to Israel. But
this guy's Oded Ruskin.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They might all be Zionists. Who knows?
I just think it's telling when you have two Israeli creators purposely say they don't want, like, basically, instead of saying, yeah, maybe we should have a Palestinian in the room to have a different perspective, their response is they make their own show, which is not unifying. It's not collaborative. You're showing a clear preference in the side you're interested in telling. I don't know.
Can I tell you about false flag, though, real quick? It's very interesting. It has nothing to do with Palestine, but it's about the Iranian ambassador gets, like, kidnapped, and the Mossad is trying to figure out who kidnapped this Iranian ambassador. Mm-hmm. And because Iran's being like, what the fuck? So basically all these people wake up one morning and all their passports are on the news. So someone has basically framed all of them.
Holy shit.
And it's like random ass people, like a woman who's about to get married, some dad who just is like watching TV and then just sees his face like, this man is wanted. And they're like, wait, what? Mossad comes for all of them. And then, like, little by little, you start to learn, like, how they're connected to it.
Wow.
It's really crazy. Or if they're not connected to it, or if they are connected to it. It's really crazy.
Sounds good. I mean,
it's really wild. It has nothing to do with, they don't show any sort of Palestinians or anything like that. So at least that's a good thing. They don't go after anyone. It's all about what's going on in the Israeli government, mm-hmm. and like why these people are connected and how they're connected and how Mossad chooses to deal with it. And I think it's the Shin Bet as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know all the different organizations that run police over there, or whatever. Yeah. But it's very interesting. And it's very well done. I highly recommend it. I'm sure they'll make an American version of it soon. But if not, it's on Hulu. But I saw it when it first dropped because I used to work for the Jewish Journal and the LA Jewish Film Festival. So we like premiered the first two episodes and did like a Q&A with the thing. We also did a Q&A with Gideon Raff. But at the time, I wasn't looking up if anyone was a Zionist or not. I really kept my head down and didn't tell anyone in the office that I come from a Muslim family. I really just kept to myself.
I mean, sometimes you have to do that. You know, you have to pay rent.
I just didn't tell anyone anything.
Yeah.
I never really responded if they asked if I was Jewish or anything like that. No, I'd just be like,
Nod your head. Be like,
well, I didn't even nod my head. I'd just be like, I'm not Jewish. Yeah. But I would also not say my mom is Muslim, you know?
Yeah.
I just wouldn't say anything because I didn't think it was anyone's business. And I was trying to get a paycheck, honey, mm-hmm. and curate films for a film festival.
Yeah. I'm not saying that you shouldn't watch any Israeli content. I just think that. You should be wary of
the propaganda.
Of the propaganda that is inherent in those kind of things, especially if there's not a Palestinian in the process of making it.
If there's no like consultants.
That's the reason why I think Our Boys is a good representation of Arab people, because there's a Palestinian making it with them. It's not just Israeli creators making a show like how Fauda is or whatever. And I do think that the obsession with Mossad, as if it's like this James Bond-like institution in Israel, it really masks how evil they are. Like, it doesn't show that they're a truly horrendously violent, evil regime that has this, like, operational spy unit that commits so many crimes and instead makes this like, exciting James Bondian thing, which I don't appreciate. I think, it serves as a propaganda tool to convince everyone that Israel is just like this amazingly progressive place. So there's that episode. I think you have a meeting, right? I don't want you to run late.
Yeah, I got to run to a meeting. Great ep. Very interesting stuff. Don't set yourself on fire. Be aware of, or if you do, you know, really just controlled.
Yeah, I mean,
Don't do it. But, you know, sometimes protest matters. In this case, it did because it brought attention to a situation that needed attention. Also, don't watch Israeli shows unless you understand that you are being propagandized, or watch the good ones that don't propagandize, like False Flag. And keep up the good work. Buy our merch.
Follow us on
Ethnically Ambig on IG, on mm-hmm. Ethnically Amb on Twitter.
Yeah.
Go to our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com.
Yeah.
Stay loose. Stay party.
Stay party.
I don't know.
Yeah, until next time. What, Shirohiro? Yeah, I'm Shirohiro, S-H-E-E-R-O-H-E-R-O on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter.
Yeah, go into a forest. Just appreciate nature. Get out there. See the stars.
Shireen has learned what outside is. Follow her instruction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay wild.
Ask me to bite your ass.
Will you bite that ass?
I will.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
I've been trying to write a promo for our podcast, Part-Time Genius, but even though we've done over 250 episodes, we don't really talk about murders or cults.
I mean, we did just cover the Illuminati of cheese, so I feel like that makes us pretty edgy. We also solve mysteries like how Chinese is your Chinese food and how do dollar stores make money? And then, of course, can you game a dog show?
So what you're saying is everyone should be listening.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.